Okay, this week is Parshas Behaloischa. If you remember, this is the laning of Hanukkah. This is the highlight of Hanukkah, the lighting of the menorah. Okay, it's interesting that right after Shavuos we lay about the menorah. We are reminded about Hanukkah. Why are we reminded about Hanukkah? Hanukkah represents the Chanukas HaMizbeach. Oz Egmor B'Shiris Mor Chanukas HaMizbeach was the renewal of the Beis HaMikdash. And at this point of the year is already when we have to start thinking about Tisha B'Av. And it's a very polite reminder, soon, in another week, another week and a half, is going to be Rosh Chodesh. It's not Shabbos Mevarchim this week, but it's coming around the corner. Sometimes Ba'alayis Chas Shabbos Mevarchim, it's all around the corner, and therefore it's a nice little reminder that we have to think about the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And as a very interesting reminder, we think about the landing of Chanukah. And Chanukah was all about when the Yevanim, when the Chashmonaim, they were able to take back the Beis HaMikdash and restore it to what it was before. Never.
Well,
Nasa is always after.
Nasa is always after
Shavuos.
And Shavuos was very early. I mean, it was Sunday, Monday.
Okay. This Shabbos by Hasidim is a very. I saw it in the Emunah Sitecha. He quotes. I don't know who this Rebbe is, but he says something very interesting. He says the minig by the Hasidim in this Hasidus, when the Rebbe on Shabbos went to shul or he went to mikvah on Erev Shabbos on Parshas Behaloischa, he was accompanied by singing and dancing. Why? Because in this week's parasha, we have the words Ki Hashem Diber Toiv Al Yisrael. What nicer thing can we have in the parasha, in the Torah, than such a beautiful expression? When Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Chayvav, and he told him, "Come with us. We're traveling to Eretz Yisrael." Let me read you the words right before Vayehi Ben Soho Aron.
He told
Yisrael that you shall come with us. V'chaya ki selech imanu v'chaya hatoiv hahu asher yetiv Hashem imanu yitavnu lach. Where is that? That's a different pasuk. Ki Hashem diber toiv al Yisrael. Where is that pasuk?
Yud lamed.
Right, that's Yud Lamed. Yud Lamed, it says where? Pasuk Chavtes. L'cha itan ve'itav lach ki Hashem diber toiv al Yisrael. That's an amazing idea. Okay, where do you have such a thing in the Torah where we have such a beautiful expression ki Hashem spoke well on Klal Yisrael, and we should remember that when we lay in the parasha. Another reason why Parash Ba'alayischa is a very important parasha is because it is considered the parasha of refuah. Why is it the parasha of refuah? You would think that parashas b'shalach. Vayom Hashem kol what? What would be the? If you ask a person which parasha, all the parasha of refuah, so you would say the after the shira kol hamachla sher samti v'mishem lo yasim loch ki ani Hashem roifecha. Enoch nami. It's a very nice parasha, and the fact they actually give that aliyah sometimes to chaman some persons chayla, they give the shira to Chayle, because you should get that pasuk at the end. But even more so, this week the Mefarshim say it's even more powerful, because here we have the Koyach HaTzvilah at the very end of the parasha. Moshe Rabbeinu is misfal vayitzak Moshe Hashem leimar kel na refa na la. It's the only place in Chamish Chumshe Torah where Moshe is misfal for an individual, for a specific person. And Menela, every refuah, every time you mispalel for an individual, where we are mispalel for other people, others are mispalel, whatever the situation is, where a person is mispalel, it's rooted in the koyach of this pasuk, kel no refuah no la. So this week is a very significant week. It's a parsha of refuah. Okay, now in the beginning of the parsha, we once mentioned this idea a while ago. I want to go back to this idea. Three times in the Torah is it mentioned the menorah. It's mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh. Parshas Tetzaveh, the Torah describes exactly how the menorah is to be made. Okay, let me find the page. Right, not Parshas Truma. Parshas Truma, I'm sorry. Parshas Truma.
By Parsh Emor, Ha Parsh Emor. Wait, not Parsh. Parsh has Tetzave. Even though in Parsh, in the beginning of the Parsh, Tetzave, the way it says. Here, this is referring to. V'yatot Tetzave es v'nei Yishov yichui lecha Hashem en zayizok asis lamor li halo esner tamid. B'oyel moed michutz la pareches asher al hoedus yaroch oso you shall light it. It doesn't say where to light. It just says yaroch oso aron uvonav me'er v'okul lefnei Hashem. Just light it. In Parshas, Parshas Truma describes what the menorah looks like, but does not describe the lighting of the menorah. In Parshas Tetzaveh, it describes the lighting of the menorah without any details. In Parshas Emor, in the Moadim, it says Michutz La Pareches Ho'edus Bel Moed Yaroch Oso Aaron Uvanov. It tells you where to light it. Michutz La Pareches. Outside the parochs tells you the location. Michutz la parochs in the oil moed, that's where Yaroch Oso Aron Uvanav Me'er V'Aboik Lefnei Hashem Tamid. There's a little bit more detail, and then it goes on to say, is really the pasuk I was referring to, Al Hamenoira Hatohoira Yaroch Saneros. It doesn't just say Yaroch Saneros. It says it should be lit in Al Hamenoira Hatohoira. If not for this pasuk, you can make a mistake and think that there are two separate things. There's the menorah, there's a beautiful candelabra, but it's just there for as a tachshit, as an ornament. You want light? You want it to be practical? Who says we put light bulbs in the menorah? The menorah is just there as a decoration, a furniture piece. Light, so then, well, you have neros, make seven neros, make a table, put on the table a little local tea lights, put some tea lights on the table. That's what we would think. If not, if all we had was Parshas Tetzaveh, that's all we would think. Along comes Parshas Emor, guess what? The menorah is not just a furniture piece, it's also practical. You also should take your tea lights, your neros, and put the neros al hamenorah hatohora yaroches haneros lefnei Hashem tamid. In Parashas Bahalosha, we go even to the next level. The next level is that not only should you light the neros on the menorah, the neros shall point towards the center. The beginning of Parashas Bahalosha, daber el aron v'yamarat elav behalosha es haneros el mul. A new condition, a new level, El Mul Pnei Hamenoro Ye'iru Shivas Haneros. The Neros should all be facing the center. So Sach HaKol we have in the Torah exactly three times where we are instructed to light the menorah. The first time we light the menorah doesn't tell us where to light the Neros. It's not even Mucha, we have to light it on the menorah. The second time it tells us light the Neros on the menorah. And the third time it tells us to light the Neros facing, the Neros shall be lit facing the center lamp. Now there's a medrash. I'm not sure what this medrash is. Maybe it's not a medrash. Maybe this is just a machshava I saw somewhere. I don't remember. But the idea is that why are there seven branches on the menorah? So the medrash says that seven branches correspond to the shisha sidrei mishnah. And the Gemara and then the after in list the shisha sidrim. It says Yiras Hashem hi oitzaray. And the Gemara says if a person may be a very great Talmud Chacham, may have mastered all six of the Shisha Sedarim, but guess what? If you don't have Yiras Shemam, you may know Zroim, Moyed, Noshim, Kachim, Tarois, and what I leave out, and the Zikin, you may have all of these Sedarim on your fingertips, but if you don't have Yiras Hashem Hi Oitzaro, it's not worth anything. Yiras Shemaim is everything. So the Mefarshim explained that is why in the Menorah there are six, there are many Midrashim, what the seven branches correspond. Seven different branches of knowledge, branches of Chochmah, other ideas, but one interpretation is it corresponds to Shisha Sedarim on the sides, and all of them point towards the center lamp, because the center lamp represents that your learning has to be L'Shem Shamayim. That is what is being taught to us over here in Parashas Bahalaisha, is telling us the praise of Aaron. Vayas Kain Aaron, El Mul, what is the praise of Aaron? Aaron, if we were writing the poem, Aaron, he was good, he lit the menorah. Vayas Kain Aaron, he lit the menorah. That's not what the pasuk is coming to praise. The pasuk is very precise. Vayas Kain Aaron, what did Aaron do? Aaron, not only did he light the menorah, not only did he light the menorah, the neros on top of the menorah. Vayas Kain Aaron el mul pnei ha menorah helo neroseha kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. The greatness of Aaron is, Rashi comments of the famous Rashi, Bayaskin Aaron lahagid shivcha shel Aaron shaloi shina. He did not deviate. He did not change. What is the Mila? Well, based upon this interpretation, the Mila is that Aaron was a Yarish Shemayim. It's one thing, unfortunately, we see in the world, there are people that are very great Talmidei Chachamim. Brilliant minds, creative minds, accomplish very great things. They know everything. But their hanhaga, their behavior is not 100%. And they'll legitimize everything that they do. Novel Berishos Satara. You can light the Neros. You can have the most beautiful menorah and light all the Neros. But the Neros, the Shevach of Aaron was that he did it. He lit it. El Mul Pnei HaMenorah. The Shishas Sedarim all pointed towards the center, which represents Yiras Hashem Hi Oitzaro. If there's Yiras Shemayim, then there's everything. The only thing a person is worth being praised for is his expressions of Yiras Shemayim. Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem Ein Leila Kadosh Baruch Hu Bi'Olamo Ella Yiras Shemayim Bilvat. The years, the actions of man that show that he has a Yiras Shemayim is what gives Hashem the ultimate satisfaction, and that is what we see here. He is being praised for. Okay, let's go to another idea. Rashi here tells us, "Daber el Aaron v'amarte love behaloi sicha es haneros." The commentators ask, "Why does it say behaloi sicha and does not say behalidcha when you are madlik es hamenorah? Why is it described with the term of haaloi sicha?" To ascend. So Rashi gives two interpretations. Number one, you have to hold the Ner. You have to hold the Ner when the Shamas, when the Kohen lights the menorah, he has to keep the Shamas there until it's Oile Me'oleha, until the Ner already can stand on its own. It's not just enough just to touch the Ner and then take the Shamas away. You have to remain standing with the Shamas touching the Ner until the Ner is 100% independent. That's what Rashi says. I'll read you the words of Rashi. Behaloi scha al shem shehalahav. The flame is oile. Ksiv it says behadlo scha loshan aliyah. Shetzorich lehadlik ad shetehei hashalheves oile me'oleha. Now, I once heard, I think it's from Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, he explains, what is the deeper meaning of Rashi? The pasuk here is teaching us about a Rebbe teaching a Talmud. When a Rebbe teaches a Talmud, it's not just enough to give him the tools. In other words, the person has a Talmud, so I'll give you the skills. Come to me, we'll learn for an hour or two, I'll give you the skills, I'll give you the art scroll, I'll give you the sifta, I'll learn with you, and then you go figure it out. You go figure it out, and I have faith in you, I have trust in you, that you'll be able to master the mesechta, and you'll be able to stand on your own. That is not a derech and chinuch. Here, Aaron is serving as the master teacher. He's teaching by learning the menorah represents Torah. Learning the menorah represents teaching Torah. When you teach Talmidim Torah, you have to be with them until the very, very end. Until they stand on their own. Until the lahav, the flame, is oile me'aleha, does not need any further assistance. Not just enough for a Rebbe to go and to encourage the Talmud and to give him the basic skills and just hope for the best and then step away. You have to go and work with the Talmud until the lahav is oile me'oleha. That is what one interpretation of the deeper meaning of Rashi. Now there's another interpretation of Rashi, and Rashi says the reason why it says behaloyzch is to teach you that you have to have steps in front of the menorah. When you light the menorah, Rashi says there were steps. The O Darshu I was saying, Mikan Shemay Lahoy Lefei Amenorah, Shalecha Koyin Omid Meitid, that the Koyin would step up upon his foot on the stool. There were three steps to light the nearest of the menorah. And the Farshim asks, why is that necessary? Why wouldn't it be enough to stand below? The menorah was 18 tefachim. You can reach, even though I can't actually look down on the Neros, I can reach the Neros from a distance. You see sometimes when they light these giant sized menorahs on Hanukkah, they can't, they're not above the Neros, they're below the Neros, and they have this long stick, and they're lighting the menorah. That's not maybe good for Hanukkah, but that's not good for lining in the Beis Hamikdash. There had to be some type of stool, some type of platform upon which Aaron would ascend, so he can look down on the Neiros in order to light the Neiros. So it's interesting that I saw something from Rav Moshe. He says the same idea as before with regard to this concept. When a Rebbe teaches Torah, lining the menorah again represents the concept of a Rebbe teaching Torah. When a Rebbe teaches Torah, it's not just enough to teach from a distance. I don't know all the details. I assume you're doing well. I'll give you some homework. You come back the next day. It's like the Rebbe is standing below and he's taking a long stick and he's pushing to ignite, to light a spark on the menorah, and hopefully the Nair will go well. If you really want to light it well, you have to get up on a platform and be on top of it and look down to make sure that it's being lit perfectly well. So it comes out that really these two ideas of Rashi, are really two sides of the same coin. The common denominator of this Rashi is the drush, and a lot of the Mefarshim express in this pasuk is that the lighting of the menorah represents a Rebbe teaching Torah to Talmidim. When a Rebbe teaches Torah to Talmidim, if you want to guarantee that the lahav will be oyla me'aleha, that the flame will stand on its own, the only way you can do that is if you're on top of them. You are take an interest, you're fully involved in the success, in the growth, the accomplishments of the Talmud. Then will the lobby oyla me'aleha, will you succeed? The two ideas of having a stool to stand upon, plus remaining there until the very end, are totally zebizeh. One cannot succeed without, you cannot do one without the other. Okay, let's go to another idea. We have here, Rashi tells us that the menorah has a platform, has a stage upon which you stand up. What's very bizarre is that the Mizbeach also was too high to reach. The Mizbeach was the height of the service of the Mizbeach was totally, where the corner was 10 amos, but the part that you go up to was only 9 amos. 9 amos is approximately, 15 to 18 feet. No one's be able to go and climb up 18 feet, so there was a ramp. The ramp was massive. In order to reach a height of 18 feet, you have to have a ramp that Chazal was 32 almost long, 64 feet. A massive ramp. We also saw the models of the Beis HaMikdash, there's a massive ramp. So the question is, why is it that when it comes to the Mizbech, is there a ramp? But when it comes to the menorah, there are 3 steps. There was no ramp in the Heichal for the menorah. Yeah, what's the teretz?
Was by the Mizbeach.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything on the ramp. The ramp was used to get to the kevis, or to get to the top of the Mizbeach.
Okay.
When you're by the menorah and you're on a ramp and you're on an angle, you can't stand properly.
No, so it'll level off. It'll level off. It'll come up on a ramp and then there'll be a flat surface.
Make a platform.
A platform. Why is the design of the menorah, all the models show 3 steps? And you stand on the 3rd step. Why are you allowed to ascend to the menorah on steps? The Torah says by the Mizbeach, Lesale b'malois al mizbechi, v'lo sigole ervascha olav. It will be a disgrace. You're going to expose the air. If you take steps, it will cause you to spread your legs widely, and that exposes the erva. Even though the whole body is covered, but still underneath it's exposed to some degree, and that is disgraceful when you're coming close to the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, it's even more disgraceful to expose your erva when you go into the Heichal. The menorah is not in the Azara. The menorah is even a holier section of the Beis HaMikdash. It's in the Heichal. It's right in front of the Kodesh HaKodashim, and there's no problem. You're walking up steps, you're exposing your erva, and the Torah has no problem with this. B'halos chesaneros, amala, you have 3 steps. What is the difference between the Mizbeach and the menorah? So the answer is very powerful. You cite the answer is when it comes to the mizbech. What are you doing? The mizbech represents sacrifice. When a person has to sacrifice in life for chinuch, for Torah, for shmiras hamitzvos, you have to do it with dignity. It's hard enough to make the sacrifice. The reason why, when the erev is exposed, one of the reasons why the erev may not be exposed is not just that it's disgraceful, it's also embarrassing. A person feels a degree of embarrassment. Adam and Chava were naked, v'lo yispo shoshu. After the eighth and the eighth sadas, now they realize that they realized they were naked, they were embarrassed. When a person feels that his erev is exposed, when he's walking up steps, and he feels that his erev is exposed, It brings a degree of shame. When a person in life makes sacrifices for the greater cause, whether he gives up his life, al kiddushim shemayim, whether a person has given up an enormous amount of money in order to be observant, he gives up his job for Shmir Shabbos, he gives up his time to learn Torah, whatever it is, it's difficult. Person feels it's very difficult. The person has to feel that he's doing, that he has to be dignified, has to feel proud that he's able to make the sacrifice in honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, when you go up to the Mizbeach, as Hashem wants to be Merames, don't feel any shame. You should feel proud that you're making a sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the way I want you to remember that you should feel proud is there are no steps. There's no room for any shame, any embarrassment when it comes to making a sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when it comes to the menorah, what does the menorah represent? It represents Talmud Torah, learning Torah, teaching Torah. What does it say in Pirkei Avos? V'lo habayishon lomed. A person that gets embarrassed will never learn. You have to, even with the shame even if it involves shame, you have to do it. A person, we ask a question, a stupid question, he's going to be making fun of. He's going to be laughed at. But the only way he will succeed in learning Torah is through shame. He has mechuyev to do so. And in fact, sometimes that's the only way. This is the way a person has to humble himself in order to achieve, to succeed in the lighting of the menorah. So we have the two kelim, the menorah versus the mizbeach. One, Hashem is makbid, there should be no shame. The other one, Hashem says, Adarabah, there should be a degree of shame in order that you should learn from that, that you have to humiliate yourself in order to accomplish and to succeed in the learning of Torah. Okay, let's jump now to the end of the parasha. End of the parasha, we learn about Eldad Umeidah. We'll come back to some things here a little bit later if we have time. Eldad Umeidah, sort of very interesting idea. I'm giving you now a very raw idea. It's extremely raw. It's not a complete idea, but I found it interesting. I just want to just throw it out. From the Chassam Sofer. Moshe Rabbeinu decides that he cannot lead Klal Yisrael alone. He needs assistance. He complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says, fine, bring me the Zekanim 70. Zekanim, I'm going to pour upon them. I'm going to bring upon them Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah, and they will assist you in leading Klal Yisrael. Hashem says to Moshe, we're going to do this. We're going to have 70 Zekanim. Esfali Shivim Mishmi Ziknei Ha'am. 70. Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem, so Moshe Rabbeinu says, how am I going to get 60? How we have 12 Shvatim. 12 Shvatim, it's not divisible. There's no way we can work. 70 is not divisible by 12. So we got a problem. The best that we can do is we can take 6, the fairest thing we can do is we can take 6 from 10 Shvatim, and we can take 5 from 2 Shvatim. That's the best that we can possibly do. Problem is, someone's going to be insulted. Who am I to say to a Shevet, you're only good enough to provide 5? They're good enough to provide 6. I'm going to lose my job. That's not going to go off well, selecting 2 Shvatim that are only deserving of providing 5 members for the Sanhedrin and not 6. So Moshe came up with a plan. By the way, Chazal seemed to criticize Moshe, that Moshe really should have selected. He should have looked at the 70 candidates. They all should have come and they should have knocked out 2. He should have said, you're not Roy. But Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to insult anyone's feeling, hurt anyone's feelings, so instead he made a goyel. What did he make a goyel? Rashi quotes the entire process. He prepared 72 pieces of ballots. 72 ballots, and he brought forth, each Shevet presented their 6 best, their 6 brightest and finest accomplished young men, or Zekanim, whoever they were, to serve as leaders in the Sanhedrin, and he gave each one of these 72 individuals a ballot. And on 70 of the 72, it said, I forgot what it said, that you have been selected as the Zokain for the Sanhedrin, and 2 are blank. And the ones that receive the blank ballots will be the ones that are not going to be selected. So it turns out that there were 2 people, Eldad and Umeidad, they didn't even show up. they figured since two people are going to be anyway, not so, you know what, we'll volunteer to be from those two people, whichever Sheva they were from, and we only have 70, and that's how they were not part of the total sum of 72. The question over here is, what is this thing 72, and what is this number 70? We are brainwashed that there are 70 members of the Sanhedrin, but yet the obvious problem is 70 is not divisible by 12. Where does all this come from? 72, 70, Eldad Umeda, they were not part, and instead HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them their own separate Ruach HaKodesh, and they started saying prophecy, and they said that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die, and Yeshua is going to take their place, and Yeshua comes and complains to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, good for them, Halavai, the whole Klal Yisrael should be in a Madrega with the Zerchat of Ruach HaKodesh. What is this all about? So I don't have a complete idea, but it's something that is very interesting. The Sasemis, the Chassam service is as follows. You can look back in Parashas Noach, and you count all of the descendants of Noach, you will discover there are exactly 72 descendants of Noach that are listed in the Torah. 72 names. Why? Said they have probably the Chumash. They have in the back of the Ark of Chumash. They have the whole tree. Why are there 72 names? Because when Hashem created the world, the plan was there would be 72 nations. Or we should really say 72 languages. Okay, 72 nations, 72 languages. However, two of these 72 would be incomplete, not a complete nation, because Hashem knew at the time of creation that the Beis HaMikdash would have to be destroyed. Because he knew from the beginning of time that Klal Yisrael would not be worthy of maintaining, having the Kedusha rest among them, and the Mikdash would need to be destroyed, and we would have to recruit a volunteer to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. In the news, they have every so often, certain countries, they have job offerings to be an executioner. It's not in China, yeah, North Korea, Saudi Arabia, they're looking for Americans are interested in going to Saudi Arabia to become an executioner. What?
You don't have to pay, it's good pay. But you
it's
don't
good
have to
pay.
Be a Muslim to be an executioner.
$1,000 per.
Any volunteers?
But you don't have to be a Muslim to be an executioner?
Okay, so they're looking for, now why is it that not everyone is running? If they have millions of people in these countries, hundreds of millions of people in these countries, why are they looking for volunteers? Why do we know about it? Obviously, not everyone is interested in the job. No matter what the pay is, it's extremely difficult for one human being, a normal, healthy human being to take the life of another person. The people who are the criminals, they're the ones being killed. So they, the ones that have no problem doing this, are the
immunity.
They're the ones who are on the other side of.
They're fighting in ISIS.
Obviously, it's not so easy. It's not so easy to find a volunteer that's willing to do something like this. Likewise, no nation that was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a full nation would have anything to do with destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he foresaw that Klal Yisrael, in order to guarantee that Melech HaMashiach would come at the proper time, it would be part of the process of his Golus. And Golus says there has to be a Chorban. There has to be nations, two nations, that are going to be subhuman. I don't mean to take it literally, but have to be deficient in their shleimus, so that they can be the ones that will bring about the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. Who are these two nations? They are the Kazdim, it says in the Beferish Nepas, the Kazdim, and they are the Romans. The Romans. Both of these things, it says, the Apsuk of the Torah, which tell us, Akniyem Beloy Am. Then Pasuk in Parashas Hazinu, that Pasuk is in reference to Rome. Akniim, I will make them jealous, Biloy Am, with a group of people that are not considered to be an Am. They're nothing. They're non-existent. The Kastim is, that's a Pasuk in Yeshaya, the Kastim. There's a different Pasuk in Yeshaya. I wrote down the Psukim. I don't know where I wrote it down. Let me see if I can find it. Bozui Atah Me'oid. Akniyim, that's one pasuk. Akniyim b'loy am b'goy novol achisem. These are nations that are not real nations. Hein eretz kastim ze ho'om lo hoya. pasuk in Yeshaya. This is a nation that did not exist. So we have in the Torah and Tanakh two psukim that describe two nations that are beloyam. They're not real nations. The Kazdim, they're not entities. The Kazdim, which were the predecessors of the Babylonians, or their part, what? The Kazdim. The Roman is in Hazinu. Hazinu. Look at Rashi in Parashas Hazinu. Akniim beloy am begoy novol achisem. Look at Rashi in the Mefarshim in that pasuk. I'm going to make them jealous. Meaning, I'm going to provoke them and I'm going to harm Klal Yisrael with a nation that's not a nation. They don't really exist. And the Mefarshim, in fact, they elaborate upon this, is that both of these nations did not have their own language, and that's where it comes into the concept of nivu, which is nivsif asayim. The Kazdim, they conquered the Kazdim, Ashur. They came after, they're the ones who destroyed the nation of Ashur. The Kazdim did not have their own language. They made up a language. It's not a real, Chazal say this, they made up a real, what? Bavel, maybe they, I don't know. Bavel is part of the Kastim, so I'm not sure how we break them up. Bavel was more legitimate than the Kastim, but the ones that actually destroyed the Beis Hamikdash are considered to be from the Kastim, and they are what the pasuk says beferish is a non-nation. I don't have the sources what about their language in detail, but we do know about the Romans. This is a Gemara. The Gemara says that Latin. If you go over, listen to the radio and the etymology, people who write articles about the English language, Latin is a man, it's not a real language. Latin is a language that was stolen from all other languages.
Greek, mainly from Greek.
It was mainly taken from Yavon. It's a Farish of Gemara. It's a Yerushalmi, not a Bavli. It's a Yerushalmi. It mentions the name of the person. It was a brilliant person. He went and he took a little bit, mostly from the Greeks, a little bit from here, a little bit from there. He took 19 letters, and there are 19 letters in Latin. Is that how many letters there are? He took 19 letters and he created his own language. It was stolen, plagiarized. English is a derivative of Latin. Everything in English comes from, almost everything in English is
all the Roman language.
Yeah, comes from Latin.
Of Latin. And where's Latin? Latin is a plagiarized, it's a ripoff. It's not real. And therefore, that is why it was specifically the Kastim that destroyed the Bayis Rishon, and it was the Romans that destroyed the Bayis Sheni. Because these are entities that are not part of the original creation. When Hashem allowed Noach to survive and populated the world with 72 nations, there were two who were the ancestors of the Kazdim. You have to look in the, we have to figure out which two they are. It doesn't say which two they are. That would be very interesting to study all the 72 names in Sefer Noach, in the Chumash, in Parshas Noach, and figure out which two are different than the other 70, which are the ancestors of the Kazdim and the ancestors of the Romans. They were lacking in language. Their language was not 100%. No, Esav. Esav is Rome, but it's more complex than that. It's there are many layers. There are many layers which go into their descendants. They all mingle together. So the only point I want to make here is the Chassam Sefer says, not a complete. I didn't something to think about is there's all these parallels. Zeh l'uma zeh bara Elokim. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu creates a koyach of kedusha, in order there should always be a balance. A person should have an equal nesoyah. You can choose between toy v'ra. There must always be an equal balance, just like among the umos ha'olam, by studying Parshas Noach and studying the Tanakh of the Chumash HaMikdash, there is 72 nations, but two of those 70 nations are incomplete. Likewise, it had to be in the Koyach of Kedusha of the Sanhedrin. When Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to give Kedusha to Klal Yisrael by making Sanhedrin, there's going to be a Shefa of Ruach HaKodesh which corresponds. Then the Sanhedrin is not just for Klal Yisrael. The Sanhedrin decides matters for the entire world. In the ideal world, the Sanhedrin represents, there are 70 members of the Sanhedrin. Why? Because now we understand, because 70 correspond to the 70 nations of the world. But what do you mean 70 nations? But there are 72 nations. There are 72 nations of the world. Go look in Parashas Noach. Read the Psukim. There are 72 nations. The answer is, you're right, there are 72 nations, but two of those nations are incomplete. And you see that hinted to here in this week's parasha. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to create the Sanhedrin, which are the parallel, which are going to be the parallel in Kedusha to the 70 nations of the world, he starts off with 72 nations. 72, and two of the 72 are dismissed, or they're not fully given the attention they deserve. There are going to be two ballots that are blank. And who are those two ballots? Who do those two ballots end up going to? Eldad Umedad. Now we understand why they prophesied what they did. What was their prophecy? The prophecy was, there's going to be a Churban. How do we know they prophesied there's going to be a Churban? Because they said Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to make it into Eretz Yisrael. And it's a well-known medrash that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have come into Eretz Yisrael, Klal Yisrael would never have, the Mikdash would never have been destroyed, Mashiach would have come. And therefore, Moshe is not going to make it. The one that's going to go is Yeshua. Yeshua is not a Moshe Rabbeinu. That means there's going to be a Churban. Oh, there's going to be a Churban. Who's going to bring the Churban? There's going to be the Kastim, there's going to be the Romans, there's going to be those two nations which are incomplete. Who is saying this? The ones that are saying this is the parallel in Kedusha to the Koach of Tumah. Eldad Umedad of Kedusha, they're good people. Eldad Umedad, but those are the two which parallel the two nations of the Kastim and of the Romans, which in turn go back to the time of Noah, which were not granted their own language and were not considered to be a full-fledged nation, because if they were a full-fledged nation, they would not have the will, they would not have the conscience to bring about a Churban Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately had to separate two from the 72 in order to allow such a thing to occur, which would then really mean that ideally there really should be indeed really 72. There should be 72 members, 72. How, where would you have 70? Maybe you would say there would be Moshe Aaron, because the Sanhedrin really was 70. The Sanhedrin was 70, and then Moshe al Gabehem, that's 71. And if you want to count Aaron, Aaron is the Kohen. The Kohen is the Torah Yivakesh Mipiu. He's also called the leader. That would seemingly bring the Sanhedrin to a... What?
You have to have an odd number.
You have to have an odd number. The odd number only in a situation when you have a dispute, a tie. But only when there's a tie, you need an odd number. Okay, but
decisions by two.
Okay, but you do have this. The numbers, it has more flavor when we have some more background. Okay, let's go to another idea of the parasha. Yeah.
And the languages. Are we saying that Hashem created 70 separate languages? Not that Hebrew is the only
correct
language that they're all derived from.
Correct. 70 real languages. They're probably all extinct by now. They're probably all extinct by now. The real languages. All the languages are knockoffs, are make-believe languages,
but
or remnants.
Bubble, right,
whenever. We don't. If you want to study the world today, they'll probably tell you, go along, they'll probably tell you there are probably 500 languages today, right? At least. Even computer programming, there must be a good 50 computer programming languages. So I talk about real languages, they're probably hundreds of thousands, but they're not all, they're all just dialects of another, they're all variations. Some of them are nonsense.
Like all the Romance languages.
Okay, let's go further. We have, yeah.
It's the only legitimate language around.
Well, not. I wouldn't say legitimate. There are, Chazal said there are 70 legitimate languages. They're real languages. This Chochma. Torah is Lashon HaKodesh. This is the holy language. There are 70 languages, and then there's an additional holy language, Lashon HaKodesh. But not to diminish the legitimacy and the Chochma of the 70 languages. They're Molei Chochma. They're real. It's just like science is real. No one's denying science is real.
Torah uses some fun.
Sometimes. Totafos. But there's the Lashon HaKodesh. Today, do we know even one language? Probably not. Probably there's not. There's probably some remnants, some fragments of the 70 original languages in the world. What? They're fragments, right? But to say that there's a pure language, there's something pure that's still left off in Maaseh Bereishis, not likely. Maybe to some degree. Aramaic, not probably, I don't know. There are many dialects of Aramaic as well.
They say that in Syria, there's a group that's going to have
the
Aramaic.
Still retain some.
Okay, let's go to the end of the parasha. End of the parasha, we have Miriam. Miriam speaks Lashon Hara, and she's smitten with Tzaras. Moshe Rabbeinu is mispal for Kelner Rafon Allah. He's mispal for her, And then Hashem, Moshe says to Hashem, then Hashem says to Moshe, listen, you have to wait. Even though I accept your bakasha, that she will be healed, she has to wait for 7 days. I want to put her to shame. I want people to talk about her for 7 days. A sentence. She was put away for quarantine. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, the Aviyah, Yoroik Yorak Bifonech, Halosi Kolem Shivas Yonim. If her father would spit in her face, would she not be ashamed for 7 days? Therefore, Tisoger Shivas Yomim Michutz Lamachne V'Yachar Teosev. Therefore, Dayoi, really, she should be put away for 14 days. But Dayoi, love him, and I didn't leave his kilidoin. So therefore, you only go away for 7 days. So therefore, she was sentenced. Here you learn about good behavior, you get off for good behavior. 7 days. 7 days, okay. So the question over here is, this is a very bizarre pasuk. Hashem says to Moshe, if her father would spit bifanecha, what is that all about? If her father would spit in her face, halosi kolem shivasim, since when does the Torah talk like this? If her father would spit in her face, so Rashi says, it's not to be taken literally, what it means is her father would put her to shame. Let me read you the words of Rashi, pasuk yidalet, v'imodhiya hera la panim zoyafais, which show her a harsh countenance. Halosi kolem shivas yomim. So Rashi says, spitting here means ponim zoyafis. Now the truth is, her father at one point in time did show her ponim zoyafis. And when was that?
They found out when she was born and she wasn't a boy.
When? What?
When she was born and she wasn't a boy.
So that's not a problem. Boy, did I get in trouble saying that? Okay, but when did her father show her panim zayafis? When did this happen? When Moshe Bayelech Paro was goyzer kol habein hayiloid hayoira tashlichu. So Amram said, "I'm the god of Hadar. If we continue to have children, it's murder. Every male that's born is going to be thrown into the yam. Therefore, I command everyone should separate from their wives. Everyone should divorce their wives. And starting with me, I'm going to set the example. Amram was poyresh from Yocheved. Miriam says to her father, "Father, is this the proper hanhaga? You separate from your mother, you're worse than Paro. Only a daughter can say that to a father. You're worse. Even the wife can't say talk like that to her husband. You're worse than Paro. Paro was only going to Allah Zechadim by you by separating from your wife. You've been going to under the Kevites. Because now, no one will be born." So her father said, You're right. I have Charata. And Amram remarried. Machzer Gerushasai remarried Yocheved. He took her back. And this is justice. He took her back. Everyone in Klal Yisrael took back their wives. What happened later? And what happened shortly thereafter? And Moshe Rabbeinu was born. When Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Miriam was the happiest because this was the product of her labor. It was only because of her persuasion did her father take back her mother and bring into the world Moshe Rabbeinu. So who was the happiest person? The happiest person on Moshe Rabbeinu was born was Miriam. It was, or, you know, when a shatran hears that a shidduch he made, that a baby, there's no greater satisfaction than that, right? They made the shidduch. That itself is very satisfying that they are responsible for a shidduch. But now they have children, and then when you hear they have grandchildren and great grandchildren, what greater hanukkah can you have in this world than knowing that you have been instrumental in bringing forth generations of children in someone else's life? So obviously the one that had the greatest satisfaction was Miriam. And then what happened, it came through, there was a gzera. Amram said, "Listen, you know I had a baby, but what are we going to do now? What's the plan? You got me into this trouble. What are we going to do now? They're coming to search for the baby. Let's hide him." They hid him for 3 months. After 3 months, they could no longer hide Moshe Rabbeinu. They came looking. They had no choice but to throw Moshe Rabbeinu into the Nile, into the Teva. Tevas Goyme. And at that point in time, Amram showed Miriam ponim zoyafis. Exactly what Rashi says. Amram said to Miriam, "What's with your nevuah? What happened? Look at you. Look what you did. This is all your fault. It's all your fault. You convinced me to get married. You convinced me to have a baby. You told me, don't worry. He's going to be the Moshiach Shal Yisrael. The bias is not the aura. But now look at the tsar. Look at the tsar. I have to go and give up my child. Was it worth it? What did I need all of this for? Amram showed Miriam, his daughter, Panim Zoyafas. Fine. So in other words, what did Amram say? Amram said, I should not have listened to you. I should have been poiresh from my wife. I should have separated from my wife. All of this would not come about. Why did Miriam, why was she smitten with Tsaras? Because she spoke Lashon Hara on Moshe Rabbeinu, and she said, Moshe Rabbeinu, look what he did. He did the wrong thing. He was poiresh. He separated from his wife. Exactly. She's always the one giving marriage counseling. Miriam was the first marriage counselor. Moshe Rabbeinu, he married a Cushis, which Chazal interpreted to mean a beautiful woman. Cushis Tzipora. Cushis is a euphemism. She was a beautiful woman. She married a Cushis, and he's poiresh from the Cushis. How dare he? She's giving, just like she criticized Amram, she's criticizing Moshe Rabbeinu. But here she was wrong. Here she was wrong. And because of the law, because here Moshe Rabbeinu had to be ready to receive Nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu at a moment's notice. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sided with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was right, Miriam was wrong. And Miriam had no right to criticize Moshe Rabbeinu. He's not like other prophets. Maybe other prophets were different. They should remain married. But Moshe Rabbeinu was in a different life. Madregu b'chobesi nemonhu pel pe'adarbo b'marev le'bechidais. And therefore Moshe, therefore Miriam, you're wrong. So now in Miriam, you're wrong. So now we make mention, ooh, just like you were wrong now. Now here's the delicate point. Miriam can say, here is the Oymek Hadin. Miriam can say, just like, you can't criticize me. You can't criticize me for telling Moshe Rabbeinu to be purged, why he was purged. The only reason why Moshe Rabbeinu exists, think about it this way, you can play with this in many different ways, but let's focus on this to follow. The only reason why this man exists is because of me, because of my criticism. He is a product. Moshe Rabbeinu is a product of my mussar that you're not allowed to be purged from your wife. It can't be, Miriam says, that a product of Musar, that you're not allowed to be poyrish from your wife, is going to be a person that will be poyrish from his wife. Right? Doesn't that make sense? My whole DNA screams, you're not allowed to be poyrish from my wife. Therefore Hashem says to her, you're wrong. This is the Oymek Hadin. You're right, but you're wrong. You're right that Moshe, and therefore I understand your conviction, your legitimacy in giving this Moser. Normally you wouldn't speak like that, but in this case different. But still, you're wrong. And the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses to her that you're wrong is with the words, the Avia Yoroik Yorak Befaneha Halosi Kolem Shiva Asim. He reminds her of Amram. Amram, you know why? Because Amram, you were also wrong. Okay, I'm playing around with this. I'm just throwing out some ideas, something to think about. Because it's true. You criticize your father. You criticize your father. But your father also was angry at you for the criticism. You criticize your father. You told your father, don't be poyrish from your wife. Amram ultimately took back his wife, had a baby, but took the baby to the Nile. They threw the baby in the Nile, and at that point in time, Amram showed Miriam Panim Zoyafis. Amram, right. What?
He was right when he did that.
Why was he right when he did that?
Okay, because he was throwing the baby away.
Okay, I don't know. I don't have clarity. I just want to throw out the idea. There's obviously a lot of connections. That's what I want to do, show you the connections, and you have to reach your own conclusion. The Avia Yoroik Yorak before Nechadosh Baruch Hu is basically saying, like what you said, we have to figure out why it's so. Miriam, I understand where you are coming from. You're coming from your belief. You have a belief that the Musar you gave your father was correct. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was a product of Musar that you're not allowed to be parish from your wife. But I want to reveal to you that you know something, maybe the musa you gave to your father was not correct. Because your father indeed, your father ultimately rejected your musa when your father took Moshe Rabbeinu to the Nile and he screamed at you and said, what's with your advice? What's with your nevuah? Look at the tsar we have by dismissing Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe there could have been a better solution, another solution. So by...
Make it a little stronger.
Yeah.
Eldad and Medad, according to one Medrash, were stepbrothers. During that period, when
Irish, they were born. They were born from another wife.
His separation was really brought into the one of them.
I don't know. It's too complicated for me. Okay, this is just something to think about. It's an idea to think about. Okay. Yes.
First of all, I have a question. Rashi uses the word "if."
Yeah.
Not if, like it was a fact. Right? Rashi's not saying it's a fact. It says it is.
No, that's what it means. So it's a lose and make believe, but we have the history. We go back to Parashas Shemos. We know the story. Okay. Yeah.
I could understand she confronted her father directly.
Okay.
Confront Moshe Rabbeinu directly. Then confronted Moshe Rabbeinu directly. I wonder how the outcome would have been different rather than an Eir Hashem. And supposedly the Ramban, this whole thing that they said it in front of Moshe.
Okay.
Yes,
but why did they wait 40 years to say it?
I don't know.
You know, by Amram, they said it right away. There was a Tekkah.
She interviewed.
You know,
why did she come out? Why did they wait 40 years? So why did she come out to the brother?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay, I want to just conclude. We're running out of time. I want to go back to the pasuk of Ayihi bin Soharon Vayoyme Moshe. We have here in this week's parasha these two psukim. I want to throw out another raw idea. And then I want to tell you, conclude with one idea. Something to think about. There's a Baal HaTurim. I don't have an explanation. I just want to just point this out to you. The Baal HaTurim takes note that there are two psukim, 85 letters that are broken up into two psukim. The first pasuk has 11, or is it 11 or 12? 12 words. What does it say in the Baal HaTurim? Pasuk Lamed Hey Vav Bin Sum Lamed. Where is Hinuch Yomar? Ksiv, it says, okay, it takes me too long to find it in Saba. Basically, there are 12 words. There are 12 words in the first pasuk. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There are 12 words in the first pasuk, and there are 7 words in the last pasuk. Why are there 12 and 7? The Baal HaTurim says the 12 words of Ayihi bin Tzor correspond to the last pasuk in the Torah. Ulechol hayot hachazok asher osa Moshe le'enei b'nei Yisrael. The last pasuk of the Torah has 12 words. The first, let me just read the last pasuk in the Torah. Ulechol hayot hachazaka, ulechol hamara hagadol, asher osa Moshe le'enei kol Yisrael. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 words. The second pasuk corresponds to Vayihi v'nucho yomar, Shuva Hashem, Rivos Alfe Yisrael, has 7 words. That corresponds to the first pasuk in the Torah that has Vayihi Bereishis, Berelokim Yisrael Yisrael, which is also exactly 7. So we have a Sefer Bifnei Atzmo. Not only is Vayihi ben Soro v'nucho yomar surrounded by upside down nuns, it's a Sefer, but it's a Sefer which encompasses the entire Torah. The end of the Torah to the beginning of the Torah. But what's interesting is, but it's backwards, not forwards. What is the significance of backwards and forwards? On Shabbos, Musaf, we read Tikanta Shabbos, Ratzitza, Karban Asecha. Sometimes we read the Aleph Beis backwards, sometimes we read the Aleph Beis forwards. Why sometimes backwards, forwards? Backwards is FIFO. First in,
first out.
No, last out. FIFO
is last in.
Last in LIFO. Last in, first out. First in, last out. However you want, whatever acronyms you have. But when Hashem created the world, when Hashem created the world, with which letter did He create the world? Let's say Hashem was going in order. So Chazal tell us, Hashem sent down the Tav. From Hashem's perspective, it's just the opposite. Hashem sent down the Tov, then He sent down the Shin, then the Resh, then the Kuf, then the Tzadi, then the Pei. When we look at the world, so we see it, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Whenever we focus on the Aleph, Beis in order, it's from the perspective of us going forward, of us trying to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are here. We see the last thing. We have entered the world after the world was completed. So we see the Aleph, the Beis, the Gimel, that we see it in that order. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, it's the, from His perspective, it's the opposite order. Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos is a day where we are guests in Hashem's home. During the weekday, we are we are separate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to some degree. Therefore, we focus on the letters of the Aleph Beis in order. But on Shabbos, when we are guests in the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's home, so we're entering the Ashvay Hashem, it's from a different perspective. The perspective is backwards. The Torah is written from our perspective. Bereishis Bar Elokim Eis Hashem V'Yesar, which we go in order. But in the middle of the Torah, not in the middle of Bamidbar, we have a Sefer Bifnei Atzma. And this Sefer Bifnei Atzma is Shakel Kenega the entire Torah, but it's Hashem Sefer. This is, certainly, and it's a real idea, Vayihi bin Tzorah, Vayom Moshe, Kuma Hashem, V'yafutzu Evecha. It's the opposite order. That's why the nuns are backwards. The nuns are signifying this as Sefer Bifnei Atzma, and the nuns are reversed. Either they're upside down or they're inverted, different ways to write the Nun. It's signifying to us that it's not just a Sefer Bifnei Atzmo, it's a Sefer Bifnei Atzmo from a different perspective, from the perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's something to think about. And last thing to conclude, this parsha of Ibn Sal Aron has ups down nuns in order to be mafsik bein Puranos LePuranos. What's the Puranos LePuranos? According to some of the commentators, there's only two bad things that have happened here. Number one, the pasuk of Vayisa, right before Vayisu Mehar Hashem, Vayisu Mehar Hashem, Chazal tell us Ketinuk Habareach Mibeis HaSefer. After Matan Torah, Klai Yisrael was very happy to leave. They fled. Enough Shia, we can't wait to go home, to leave. And after the Vayihi bin Tzoron comes, Vayiyam Kim Misoninim Ra Biyaznei Hashem, the people complained. They complained, they were hungry, they want meat, they want all these other things. In order that the two Averos, the two sins should not be juxtaposed, Chazal, the Torah went and broke it up by inserting Vayihi bin Tzoron in the middle. Now the question is, what exactly is the sin of Vayisu Mehar Hashem Ki Tinoik Habareach Mibeis HaSefer? So simply it means they just fled. They enough. Where do we heard the shir? It's late. It's time to go, and they ran away. Rav Schwab has a very different approach to the sin, and it's very interesting idea. His question is, why here in this pasuk is it called Vayisu Mehar Hashem? It's no longer called Har Hashem. Torah was given in the Midbar. The Midbar, the Har Sinai, we see its kedusha for the moment. B'mshoich hayoyvel heima yalu bahar. The base today. Are you going to go on the Har Habayis today? Even if you go on the Har Habayis, no one's going. No one's going to the real Har Habayis. They're just going. They're just going on the perimeter. No one's going. That you're not allowed to go to. The Mokom is Kodesh, but there's nothing there anymore. The Mikdash was destroyed. Oh, something like the Ravid. The Ravid. Okay, there's a Ravid that says the Kedusha is bottled, but there's still a residual Kedusha since this Mokom was the Mokom of the Beis Hamikdash, the Ashuras Hashchina. The Kedusha remains there. You have to treat it with sanctity. So you would expect Matan Torah, the ultimate revelation. Everyone saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu openly. Of course, that Malcolm should retain a permanent Kedusha. Now, this is a very deep idea from Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab says, Hashem was Mechadesh. No, there will be absolutely no residual Kedusha. I'm giving you the Torah on this mountain. I'm going to come down, the Chvoid of Yatzmo, the Megala myself, give you the Torah, and anyone that dear comes near the mountain will be will be wiped out in a moment's notice, only during the time of Matan Torah. The moment Matan Torah is over, Bimshol Chayoyvel, when the shofar is blown, Hema Yalu Vahar. You can go on the mountain. You can check it out. Because there will be absolutely no Kedusha left. It's a one-time Kedusha on the mountain. Klal Yisrael Why? What was Hashem's message? The Klal Yisrael. You know why? Because the kedusha is not totally in a makom. The kedusha is to be in you. The atem tiyulim amlach eskarim. The kedusha bring down the Klal Yisrael. It is meant. It should enter into your neshamas. You should take the kedusha with you throughout the entire world. It's not limited to a makom. The chait of Klal Yisrael by Yisu was mehar Hashem. They said, Ribbono Shel Olam, we disagree with you. The mountain will be always the Har Hashem. We would prefer that the Kedusha not enter our neshama, and the Kedusha should remain on the mountain. And when we're in a good mood, we'll come to the mountain and serve you. And then when we're tired, we'll do whatever we want behind closed doors to have a good time. We would prefer we can put the kedusha, lock it away in a closet, and use it when we want. And we don't want, we can do whatever we want. The chait of Klal Yisrael was vayisu. They left that location and they looked at the mountain. Oh, that's the Har Hashem. In other words, halavai, the kedusha could have remained there and would not need to come with us in the midbar. We'll come back and visit on vacation to the Makom HaMikdash. You know, once in a while you get a cheap ticket. You come to Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim, you'll behave yourself. You'll have some kedusha, but not. That is the chait. The chait is the key words. We interpreted by Yisu. They ran away. They ran away. Oh, running away. It's not the running away. It's vayisu. The Shrab says the chait. It's a new idea. It's vayisu mehar Hashem. There is no Har Hashem. The pasuk says, "B'mshech hayavel heimayalu v'har." There is no Har Hashem. The Har Hashem is in your neshama, not in the mountain. The chait was the Har Hashem. That's why it's called Ketinuk HaBoreach Mibeis HaSefer. What is the son of Ketinuk HaBoreach HaSefer? When he's running home, the bell, I can't wait to get out of here. That's not the way a child thinks. A child thinks. No, it's more than that. It's much deeper than that. Today we live in a world today where you can't escape from work. You can't escape from work. If you have a cell phone, you can't get a job if you don't have email. It doesn't exist. A job without email? Then look at you, you're from Mars, and you're on call 24/7. You take your cell phone home with you, your smartphone, you're on call, you take work home with you. You can't leave work at the office. It doesn't exist today, such a thing. Wherever you go, you feel. Children can do that still. Even children. In school, I study. Okay, they give homework, but more or less, leave all the schoolwork, the scholarship, for school. When school is out, I'm out of here. I'm going to play. The school is the Har Hashem. This is where the teachers are. This is where I have to behave myself. Where I have to be good. When school is out, I go to the playground. I do whatever I want. Ketinuk HaBoreach Mibeis HaSefer. The attitude of a child is, studying is in school. When school is out, it's a hefkevelt. You do whatever you want. This was the chait of Klal Yisrael. They wanted the Torah to be on the Har Hashem. So let it remain there.
Really flee from the har,
physical har. The desire right there, and their kavanah was, we don't want, it's too much for us to take the work home with us. That the Torah should be part of our daily lives. This was not what we thought we planned for. We thought we'd leave the Torah in shul. When you come to shul, you learn Torah, you behave, you don't speak Lashon Hara. But when you go home, you do whatever you want. No, Hashem says, there is no har. The Torah goes with you, wherever you are. That was the chait. The Musar Haskel is to remember, it's not just the shul, it's not the locations. The Torah is with you 24/7 wherever you are. And not to be like... Not, we'll do the Torah in shul, Nasa v'nishma. Nasa v'nishma. Three times a day I'll do it. I'll come to shul, go to a shir, a daf yomi, at home. No.
I thought that meant they wanted to internalize.
That's what they really meant. But this is the chait over here was Rav Shwab, Yisme Hashem. It's too much for us to take home with us. We would prefer it remain on the har and not come with us. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos.